That's the solo playing of saxophonist Frederick Hemke from his CD called Simple Gifts, along with organist Douglas Cleveland, who, of course, you didn't hear on that particular tune. Simple Gifts appears three times on this disc, which has a lot of interesting music for saxophone and organ. Frederick Hemke has been called one of the legends of the classical saxophone. He was for 50 years the professor of saxophone and all kinds of other things at Northwestern University, which happens to be my alma mater. He was head of the wind and percussion division when I was there, 79 to 84, and so his face and tall physique a very familiar to me, and it's sort of fun to have him across the studio right now. He's on the campus of the University of Illinois this week as one of the soloists during this biennial national conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance, which starts today with lots of competitions and talks and other sorts of things going on. There are three evening concerts in addition to daytime recitals, and he will be performing on the first of those concerts tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, a piece that was brand new, is essentially brand new. It's had its world premiere, but this will be its Midwest premiere by a fellow Northwestern alum, Augusta Reed Thomas. And that'll be with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Fred Hemke is my guest this portion of, for the hour on Live and Local. Thanks very much for coming in.
Hey, Kevin. It's good to be here. Good to talk to a fellow Northwesternite on the Illinois campus.
Well, there's at least a few of us because the professor of saxophone here is a former student of yours, Deborah.
Indeed, she is. I'm very proud of her, too.
Yeah, well, she seems to have built up a pretty good studio here as well.
Oh, she has a tremendous studio.
Does it bother you to have people call you a legend?
Sort of, yes. I'm not sure exactly what that means, except that I will admit to it only in the sense that I've had some really wonderful students over the years, and they sort of carry on my own theories of pedagogy and musical performance. So in that sense, it becomes sort of a legend carried on now to my so-called grandchildren, even beyond immediate students like Deborah Rickmeyer, for example. But her students I consider to be my grandchildren also. It's kind of funny that way, but it's wonderful.
You know how there's a lot of musicians, let's say a pianist will trace his roots back to Liszt, who studied with so-and-so, who studied with so-and-so, who studied with Beethoven, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do people do that in the saxophone world?
Well, we don't go back too far. Saxophone was invented in 1838, and the first professor of saxophone at the Paris Conservatory was, in fact, Adolphe Sax himself. There was a hiatus after Sax left until Marcel Mühl became professor of saxophone in the 1940s. And I was a student of Marcel Mühl. So there's no direct link back to Adolphe Sax, but as far as the link back to Marcel Mühl, yes.
Tell me a little bit about him and your work with him, because he, like you, fostered an awful lot of saxophonists, including another of the guys who's called a legend here, who's also on campus this week, Eugene Rousseau, I think.
Sure. I studied directly at the Conservatoire with Mühl and received a first prize in saxophone. It was the first American at that time to do that. But Mühl was a very, very sweet fellow, a wonderful man, a tremendous musician and a saxophonist. He picked up the saxophone after he had studied violin and other instruments as well. But he really took saxophone as his true love, as so many of us do that have continued on the quest of the so-called classical saxophone. So he had an awful lot to say in a musical sense, and, of course, in a pedagogical sense also.
For example,
he reverted back to the classics himself. He made transcriptions of I think, almost all of the classics, Mozart, Beethoven, Gluck, you name it. He did all of them. So he endowed in us, I think, an appreciation of classical music. And because of his and the nature of the conservatory training, which is not just learning your instrument, but learning music history and solfege and all the rest, he endowed in all of us, imbued in all of us, that real love for classical music, and then to be able to transport that into the saxophone, which is a wonderful instrument to sing through and to play any kind of classical music. It became something that was not being done here in the States at all at the time. So that was a rather unique contribution that he made immediately. And he was kind of a practitioner that demanded excellence from his students as well. Interestingly, the system that he used in teaching there was also rather unique, not to the French, but to us here. The class of saxophone was made up of 12, and we met every week together, at least three times a week. And we each had an hour out of the three times, so that the class met for, 4 hours each time. But we always played before our peers. And he allowed criticism in the positive sense from the members of the class as well as himself. When I began teaching at Northwestern, for example, I tried to use that, but to get 12 people together at one time was impossible. I eventually did manage to get it down to 2 students at a time so that the two could work together, lesson partner together, and critique each other in performance and in class. So I like that kind of a concept. But that was something that you don't normally find in educational systems in the U.S. It's almost one-to-one on every musical instrument.
Was it because nothing of that sort was going on in the States that you ended up going to from Milwaukee, where you were born, to Paris to study?
Well, at the time, first of all, I really had heard, and there were few recordings around at the time that had serious saxophone, but Marcel Mühl was one artist that had recorded. So I had heard a record, a recording of his. And I knew nothing about his pedagogical system at all. But on the basis of his musicianship that he exhibited in the recordings that I heard, I wrote to him and asked if I might be able to study with him. And so he kindly wrote back. By the way, I had been studying French at the time. I thought I really knew French well, but I was sadly mistaken. At any rate, he was kind enough to write back and said, well, I can't promise you anything, but if you come and try out for the class, let's see what happens. So with that, I thought, heck, I can do that. So went there and tried out for the class of 12. And even though I was étranger, I was a foreigner, he admitted me to the class as a regular member of his class of 12. That was the impetus behind going in the first place, and not anything to do with his method of teaching. I had no idea, as I said, what that was about.
Was saxophone your first instrument?
Actually, it was. My dad played the saxophone. And I found this old silver saxophone up in the attic when I was about 10 years old and picked it up and never dropped it. I've learned other instruments, obviously, since then, mainly because I went into music education in my undergraduate years. And so I picked up all of the woodwinds and the brass as well. But I never, ever let go of the saxophone.
When you started playing the sax, did you imagine that this was the instrument you wanted to do? Or like so many kids, did you just figure, well, I'm playing an instrument right now?
I knew I was going to continue with it. I didn't necessarily know about classical saxophone at 10 years of age. So I played a lot of jazz, played in dance bands, and gave solo performances wherever wherever I could. But it came a little bit later after that. Maybe by the time I was in high school, then I was absolutely convinced not only was I going to play and be a saxophonist, but I was going to be a classical saxophonist.
Which a lot of people are, thanks in part to your teaching and you know, a lot of others. Jazz, of course, has been probably the more prominent of the genres for saxophone. I would venture to say without trouble that anybody who can name the name of a sax player can probably name a jazz saxophone player a lot quicker than they can name a
absolutely.
Classical one. Oh,
absolutely. No question. I love jazz. I'm just not what I'd consider to be a real jazz musician. My son, who plays the saxophone, curiously enough, of course, is a fine jazz saxophonist. And it's not that I have anything against jazz. It's one of the obviously most important mediums for music in the United States. It's our music. I'm just not a jazz musician. I'm a classical musician, just like a classical pianist and a jazz pianist, or a classical violinist and a jazz violinist. We can do both, to be sure, but I think I know where my forte is.
I wanted to play something from a CD of yours called The American Saxophonist.
Okay.
And I'm actually hoping I have the right track here, because they're not numbered on the outside.
Yes.
What I want to play is the piece by Warren Benson called Aeolian Song.
Mm-hmm.
Should that be the fourth track on here, as far as you know?
I can't
with,
tell you that.
The Ingolf Dahl as three movements.
I'm surprised that there's no number on there, but be that as it may, it probably would be after the Dahl.
Let's start what I think it might be.
All right, and I'll let you know.
You tell me, and if I have to pull it right down, then we'll know the answer to
okay.
that.
Okay. Talk about sweet people. Warren Benson was a very sweet person also. Wonderful, sympathetic musician. That piece, Aeolian Song, is the second movement of a concertino that he wrote for saxophone. The first movement with woodwinds and saxophone. The second movement as an ongoing movement, including some brass. And then the last movement, it's just brass and saxophone alone.
Music by Warren Benson, as played by the man just speaking, Frederick Hemke, along with pianist.
Who's the pianist? Jim Edmonds.
Sorry?
The pianist is Jim Edmonds.
Jim Edmonds, thank you. I couldn't find it here quickly. This is actually from a recording. Well, it combines two recordings that were issued back in 1971 and as the American Saxophonist, and some really nice stuff on here. This is a conversation here on Live and Local with Fred Hemke, who is on the University of Illinois campus this week to perform with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night, a piece that was very recently written for him. He's here as part of the North American Saxophone Alliance Biennial National Conference, which is at the university today through Sunday, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And our broadcast on Live and Local today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. Was that piece written for you?
No. I'm not sure who Warren wrote it for, to be quite frank, but because I admired Warren's writing so much, and because he was such a sensitive musician, I picked that piece up along with several others that he's written, and over the years got to know Warren very well and got to know his sense of humor also, which was really profound, but also very, very funny. So I can't remember who it was written for. It may have been written for Don Cinta at the University of Michigan. That's possible.
Is he still teaching there?
Don just recently announced his retirement.
So are the two of you of the same generation, essentially?
Well,
or more or less.
I think I'll admit frankly, Don is probably a little bit younger than I am, at least by maybe 5 years or something like that.
Well, I say that because I used to, hear of there was sort of the Don Cinta way of playing, the Fred Hemke way of playing.
Well, that's
and
not
I
really
don't know
true.
If there's anything like that.
His teacher was Larry Teal, who was a close personal friend of mine. I knew Larry and his wife very well, and I'm sure there are differences between how the two of us played and pedagogically, but nothing really astounding at all. I've always admired Don Cinta for his teaching ability. He's had wonderful students over the years also, and for his musical output. So it's nothing competitive at all. And sometimes kids and students like to make mountains out of molehills.
Of course.
Of course.
Because they want to say, well, I went to Northwestern, and therefore...
That's exactly right.
I did it as a horn player,
Sure.
I was proud of that.
With whom did you study, by the way?
I studied initially with Norm Schweikert.
Oh, yes.
Who was at the time second horn in the Chicago Symphony, and then Dick Oldberg, who was third horn at the time.
Yep.
Although, I've said to people over the years that I came to Illinois, the state of Illinois, under false pretenses, because it was with the intention of studying with Dale Clevenger, who, of course, was the principal horn. And I never did, and I actually stopped playing after my sophomore year.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Almost entirely. But that's a whole nother story.
True.
And a not very interesting one either. The reason I asked about whether the Warren Benson piece was written for you is that you have commissioned an awful lot of pieces for the saxophone. Why is that important?
If you consider what I mentioned to you earlier, that during the training with my training and study with Marcel Mule, we played an awful lot of French music written for him, plus the classics that he had transcribed himself. But when I came back home and really started to investigate what was available in this country, and that was in 1955, 1956, after I had won my first prize at the conservatory, there was the Crescent Concerto, the Sonata by Bernard Haydn, written for Larry Teal, as a matter of fact. And then we suddenly ran rather dry. There were other pieces, Jacek Erwicz, that had been around for a long time. But it became obvious that if the movement of classical saxophone was going to advance, people had to begin writing for it. So I encouraged everybody under the sun that I knew of to do that. Hence, you had a lot of pieces, some good, some not so good. But nonetheless, I felt an obligation to play them and perform them, and the volume of repertoire began to grow. Not by me alone, there were others as well that did exactly the same thing.
There's a recording that I also have in my hand here. Was this made in 2000, the Simple Gifts recording?
Yes.
That has a number of newer pieces on here. We played, of course, your rendition of Simple Gifts, which is just a folk tune.
Yeah.
This music you had described to me as rather wild. I only heard a little bit of it.
Was that Frank Furco's?
Yeah, Frank Furco Nebulae.
Right. Frank Furco is really an up-and-coming composer. More than that, he's an established composer at this stage of the game, as far as I'm concerned. But he had an awareness of the potential of both the organ and the saxophone. He played organ himself. When you hear the beginning of this work, you'll understand what I mean.
That's just a portion of a piece called Nebulae by Frank Furco and a performance by Frederick Hemke along with organist Douglas Cleveland. And I note in this recording that two organs were used, this Aeolian Skinner organ at the Alice Millar Chapel at Northwestern and then one at Trinity United Methodist in Wilmette, Illinois. Do you recall which one that was just there?
That was, excuse me. At the Methodist Church.
At the Methodist Church.
We had done several with the Alice Millar organ, and then they decided during the summer months to re-leather the instrument. So obviously that took precedence over recording, so we had to find another instrument. And this is and the First Methodist is a very, very good organ in Wilmette.
I was just curious. I used to sing in the chapel choir at Alice Millar Chapel, and so I heard that organ many times.
My daughter sang in that also. Was it Greg Fountain?
It was Greg Fountain. Yeah, it was a choir director.
You probably know my daughter.
Quite a character.
Oh, yes.
Well, we'll have to discuss that. my guest is on Live and Local is Frederick Hemke. He's on the University of Illinois campus. Right now, he's going to be soloing during this biennial conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance on their opening evening concert, which is tomorrow night, opening concerto concert, they're calling it, at the Krannert Center in Urbana. There's going to be a number of saxophone luminaries performing as soloists, Timothy Roberts and Clifford Lehman with the Illinois Wind Symphony, the first part of the program, and then Fred Hemke, Deborah Richtmeyer, who's the professor at the University of Illinois, and Eugene Rousseau on the second portion of the program with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra. And then Friday evening, there's an all-jazz program that features the U of I Concert Jazz Band with guest saxophonists Chip McNeil, who's actually on the U of I faculty, Bradley Ollie, and David Bixler. And then on Saturday evening, a chamber music concert that has Deborah Richtmeyer and Michael Holmes, who was on the show here on Monday, in a duo with piano. There'll be a quartet, the Capitol Quartet, with percussion ensemble, U of I percussion ensemble, a group called the Moanin' Frogs, doing ragtime, and then the Eastman Saxophone Project, featured also, and then finally a performance by tenor saxophonist, jazz saxophonist Jeff Coffin with the drummer Roy Futureman Wooten. And I'll be talking with Jeff Coffin on Friday's show. Looking forward to that. But I wanted to mention the Eastman Saxophone Project because Michael Holmes, when he was on Monday, told me after, you know, that I should give a listen to their recording of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, which I heard part of. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of staggering, not only because it's only saxophones and percussion, but also because they do it all from memory.
That's been a recent trend.
To play that piece from memory or groups to play from memory?
To play from memory, especially in ensemble. I'll give you another one. When I retired from Northwestern, there was an occasion and about maybe 150 of my students came back and performed the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra that I had arranged.
You arranged the whole piece?
The whole piece. For saxophones and percussion.
Do you have a recording of this? You must.
Yes, I do, but not to be released.
That I would love to hear it, you know, even if
fantastic.
It's not released. Yeah, I bet. So 150 saxophonists playing this. And all the instruments in the original recording,
sure.
In the original orchestral version.
And you had mentioned Tim Roberts.
Yeah.
He's a former student, so he was on that occasion also.
Yeah, he's going to be playing, I guess, Thursday night as well.
Yeah, fine player.
So since we've talked about students, and students, of course, is what we're mostly doing, I guess, as
sure.
Your life's work, 50 years at Northwestern. And if one goes to your website, you can find a very large list of students that you've been you've been trying to find out what everybody's doing. And so
exactly.
There's plenty who are teaching saxophone, many who are performing, some who are lawyers, one who is an actuary. I'm not even sure what an actuary is, but I noticed
that. I don't know either, but he is one.
And you do have a few who could be said to have made something of a name for themselves in the field of jazz, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't teach jazz saxophone, or did you?
No, I did not teach jazz saxophone. I taught music. I didn't teach saxophone. Sound peculiar? I mean, the mechanics of teaching any instrument are quite rudimentary, after all. You have to at least transcend that to some extent. So what I tried to do was teach music and what I knew about it. And saxophone just happened to be the medium that I used.
Did you, if you had a student who was focused on jazz, and there must have been plenty who were saxophonists.
Absolutely.
How did you work with them? Did you essentially teach them the classics, or did you work with them at what they were mostly interested in doing?
Well, you first of all, as I mentioned, you teach them basic fundamentals, production of sound, control of the instrument, technique, all of those things, that so that when they were through with study with me, they had really mastered it, and they're all hardworking kids, had mastered their instruments, and that allowed them to do whatever they wanted. Now, I, of course, went as far as literature and repertoire was concerned, I gave them a lot of the contemporary music, gave them the classical background, especially in the first year. But after that, there's a lot of contemporary music that's written for saxophone. And I would listen to them come in and play jazz as well. I really didn't want to give them a critique on it, but I did. Anyhow, but the important thing was, I think, that the kids themselves, the students themselves, were learning how they could best master the instrument so they could do whatever they personally wanted to do with the instrument as they matured and went on in life.
There, when I looked over the list of some of your students, the one name that jumped out at me is one who said, oh, I've heard of that guy, even though I'm honestly not sure I'd heard his playing, but I knew the name. It is a guy named David Sanborn.
Oh, absolutely.
In the
David's really made a name for himself in a very, very unique way also. His sound is, I mean, when you hear that Sanborn sound, you know it's David Sanborn. It certainly isn't my sound, and I've never insisted that students play with my sound. I wanted them to develop their own sound, and indeed he did.
Well, we've heard three examples of your sound. Here's David Sanborn. This is, a tune that people will know. It's a Charlie Chaplin tune called Smile. In fact, I was just talking about it, I think, on the show recently from his fairly recent CD. I think it was several years ago, called Closer. Thank you. David Sanborn, his rendition of the tune Smile, the standard, and from his CD called Closer. David Sanborn, of course, a well-known jazz artist. He's also a former student of Frederick Hempke at Northwestern University. Professor Hempke was there for 50 years until the summer of 2012. And retired. He is in the studio with me today. He's also on the campus of the University of Illinois during the biennial conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance. He'll be playing the Midwest premiere of a piece written for him by Augusta Reed Thomas on tomorrow night's concerto concert. Live and Local programs today, programs today on WILL, including Live and Local, are made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. Wanted to play another very different jazz saxophonist, also studied with you, a guy whose name I'm pretty sure I had heard, but again hadn't heard his playing, not being that well-versed in jazz. His name, Ron Blake. Did he, or for that matter, did he and Sanborn mostly concentrate in jazz when they were at Northwestern, or?
No. Wow. I think certainly in the case of Ron Blake, he did not. He came in as a concert saxophone student with that goal in mind. It's nothing that I forced on him at all. But he came in. I listened to this audition, and here was a kid that really had had tremendous potential as far as his ability to play. So for the first at least 3 years that he was at Northwestern, he played all of the classical repertoire, went through the whole regime along with everybody else, and then during his senior year and also when he worked on his master's degree, he became interested in jazz. I think he was hearkening back to his, perhaps at least to his own heritage in the Virgin Islands, where he had heard an awful lot of non-classical kinds of music, and it started to affect how he wanted to play the horn. And I encouraged him in that because, as I said, he had a tremendous amount of talent. At that time, I was teaching one day a week up at the Interlochen Arts Academy. I'd fly up for a day and then fly back to Chicago. And eventually, it got to the point where I was deaning and doing all kinds of administrative work became very difficult. So I would go up there twice a month, and then I would send Ron up the other two times because I really trusted the man as far as his ability to know how to present concert classical saxophone and also what to do for kids that were in looking for and enjoying jazz. He did a tremendous job of that. Now, Ron is at Juilliard School teaching jazz. I stay in regular contact with him, and it's fun to see kids like Ron Blake really take off and become somebody that's known in the jazz field.
Here's Ron Blake in a tune called Teddy. I don't know who wrote this tune, if it was him or not, from a CD called Shayari. He's joined by pianist Michael Caine and bassist Christian McBride. Thank you. Teddy's the name of the tune, with Ron Blake, the saxophonist, and pianist Michael Caine, Christian McBride on bass, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Playing Ron Blake because he's a student of my guest today, Frederick Hemke, who is going to be performing a new concerto tomorrow night with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, the opening concerto concert during the North American Saxophone Alliance National Conference. Augusta Reed Thomas, the name of the composer, who's also a Northwestern alum. Dr. Hemke, for 50 years, taught at Northwestern saxophone. And we talked earlier about, you know, the importance in your mind of commissioning new works. When I was looking on your website, I saw that this was called the Hemke, some folks called this the Hemke Legacy Project, to fund this commission.
Indeed.
From Gusty Thomas, I think she is known. And it was premiered, just not long ago?
3 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Recently. In New Haven, Connecticut, with the New Haven Symphony Orchestra.
I've heard some pieces of hers. They are remarkable.
They are.
All the ones I've heard. They're also often remarkably dense. Mm-hmm. What's this piece like?
This is dense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a very strong jazz influence in it also, at least from a rhythmical standpoint. But her colors, her orchestral colors that she uses are really, really fantastic. So that when things get going, it's very, very dense. There are moments of lightness in it. It's, what is she subtitled, I think, Prisms of Light. Perhaps, but there are moments
somewhere
in there when it's very translucent. But generally speaking, she tends to be very dense in her orchestration and the symphonic colors that she derives from it.
Actually, I hadn't even looked at the title until just now. It's called The Hemke Concerto.
Yes, it is.
Prisms of Light.
That's what I thought, right?
Yeah. And then four movements, Illuminations, Sunrise Ballad, Chasing Radiance, and Solar Rings.
I mean, right, and they're all joined together. There's no stop between them. It's a 20-minute work, and it just keeps going.
Well, I think she's really remarkable. I can't say that I understand her music, but I listen to it, and I just marvel at the mind that can create it.
Indeed. She presented me with it must be 3 feet long, 2 feet high, in color, a representation of her music graphically. With arches and lines and different sections exactly. And when I looked at it, there was her music. Exactly so. So she's very, very oriented towards making her music very clear and distinct so that anybody should be able to figure it out through listening to it, even though the sounds are so dense. It is. She's an amazing person, amazing composer in that regard. Very meticulous.
That premiere will be tomorrow night. The concert starts at 7. I don't think I've given the times so far. All of the evening concerts during the Saxophone Alliance Conference are at 7. There are many recitals. There are competitions going on in solo sax, sax ensembles, jazz sax, and the place to find the full schedule, and much of it is available to the public, is, I think, nasaconference.com.
NASA, yes. Right.
Yeah, nasaconference.com, NASA. Yep. So that concert tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Frederick Hemke, Deborah Richtmeyer, Eugene Rousseau, Clifford Lehman, and Timothy Roberts all soloing on that concert, two of them with the Illinois Wind Symphony, two of them with the U of I Symphony Orchestra. There's another couple of students on a recording that I found. Talking about ensembles earlier, a saxophone quartet, although I think only three of them may be on this recording. It's, I think, a wonderful transcription of the Oboe Quartet by Mozart, and it features in the oboe role a fellow named Otis Murphy, who I guess you know.
I know Otis very well. He's a marvelous performer.
Not a student, though.
No, not a student.
But two of your students, Masato Kumoi and...
Wataru Sato.
Sato are right. Both in the Masato Kumoi saxophone quartet.
And Masato in particular has become one of the leading pedagogues and performers in Japan today. I've had several of his students are now my grandchildren.
That's right. Well, here's the last movement of that Mozart quartet. Thank you. I sort of hate to break up this party, but I want to get one other recording in before we finish out the hour. We heard saxophonist Otis Murphy with at least three members of the Masato Kumoi Saxophone Quartet, the namesake, and probably Wataru Sato, both of whom are students, were students of Frederick Hemke, my guest on Live and Local today. And it's been a real treat to talk with you during this hour.
It's been great. I feel so at ease talking with a fellow musician like this. It's great. Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. And again, he'll be playing tomorrow night at the Krannert Center, a concert that starts at 7:30 with the U of I Symphony, along with a number of other very prominent saxophonists in the classical sax world. This is Live and Local on 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Got a recording here of Fred Hemke doing Gershwin. Fascinating rhythm. You're calling it Sins of My Old Age.
Right.
Why?
Very succinctly, I'll tell you. I have been performing and encouraging contemporary music all of my life, right? And my wife, who doesn't necessarily appreciate my endeavors in that regard, said, why can't you ever play something that people can whistle to or understand? I said, okay, in my old age, I'll do exactly that. A composer whom I love, I'll do a recording of Gershwin. And I had a student, a former student also, who was a very, very fine arranger, and he arranged the Gershwin tunes for string quintet and alto saxophone. So there you have it.
And here's the third of Gershwin's preludes. Thanks very much for being on the show today.
Pleasure. The